Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to today's European Missile Defense Conference Call. At this time, all parties are in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, a question-and-answer session will be conducted at the moderator's discretion. At that time, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, please press 7 on your telephone keypad. For participants using speaker equipment, it is recommended that you pick up your handset before pressing the request key. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Josh Schulmeier.
Well, good morning, and thank you for participating. I, as our operator said, am Josh Schulmeier, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientist Deputy Editor, and I wanted to start out by briefly outlining this briefing structure. We're going to give George Lewis, who is a physicist and associate director of the Peace Studies Program at Cornell University, is going to give a brief overview of the major technical finding of their article that's in the May-June issue of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists and currently available on our website in PDF form. And then we'd like to open up the call to a longish Q&A, so anybody who has questions can ask them at that time. So first, I'm going to turn it over to George to give an overview of the article's major technical finding, namely that the European mid-course radar slated to be deployed in the Czech Republic and the centerpiece of the proposed European missile defense system is actually woefully incapable of completing the tasks that the Defense Department has assigned to it. So, George.
Okay, thanks. I'll try to keep this short. Well, as I'm sure everybody knows, the U.S. is planning to deploy a missile defense system in Europe, primarily to defend against potential attacks by Iran or from somewhere else in the Middle East on the U.S. or on European countries. As Josh has said, the system would deploy a large radar in the Czech Republic, a somewhat smaller radar, so-called forward-based radar, closer to Iran, and initially at least 10 interceptors initially in Poland. And it also make use of the large early warning radar at Fylingdales in Britain, which is already integrated into our national missile defense system. The radar in the Czech Republic, which, as Josh said, is the centerpiece of this system, is referred to as the European Mid-Course Radar, or EMR, which is an X-band phased array radar. What it is it is a refurbished, or will be a refurbished version of the prototype X-band radar, the so-called GBR, ground-based radar dash P, GBRP prototype, which was the first of this family of X-band radars that our missile defense program is relying so heavily on. And this has been operational since about 1998 at our test range at Kwajalein in the South Pacific. So it will be physically moved with some improvements made to electronics and processing to the Czech Republic. And its main job is to provide high-precision tracking data on targets and to collect data that might potentially be used to discriminate targets from decoys or other countermeasures. This discrimination function is particularly important because, unlike attacks coming from, say, North Korea, where we have a big phased array sea-based X-band radar that could potentially collect discrimination data, there is no missile defense radar that could do this for attacks coming from the Middle East. All we have are these large early warning radars, which
the
don't
United
have...
States, you mean?
Hmm?
We're talking about attacks against the United States as
yes,
well as...
right. Because all we have is a large early warning radars, which have essentially no discrimination capability at all. And so while this radar, the EMR, is a physically imposing radar, it actually turns out to put out surprisingly little power for a radar of its size. And the reason for that is it operates by emitting and receiving X-band radiation using little X-band modules that are on the face of the radar. There's about 17,000 of them on the face of the radar antenna. But this turns out only to be about 5% of what you could actually put on there. And so this radar actually is much less powerful than you would expect for a radar of its size. And in fact, it puts out less power than the much smaller forward-based radar. And so when you look at trying to detect and track and discriminate real warhead targets, where you use a realistic radar cross-section for the warhead, you just find that this radar is hopelessly inadequate. It will just never even, in most trajectories, it'll never even be able to detect the warhead. On the other hand, you have to bear in mind that this radar was designed to be upgradable from the very beginning by adding more of these modules. It's not clear exactly how big of an upgrade is possible, but upgrades of the sort that they were talking about when they built it would convert it into actually a quite powerful tracking radar. So this inadequacy of this radar and its upgradability, when you couple that with the fact that we're saying we're only going to deploy 10 interceptors, which will obviously be hopelessly inadequate once Iran starts to, assuming they ever do, starts to build a significant number of missiles, really suggests that this program is an effort to establish some facts on the ground that will be hard to reverse. Just a few other general comments on some of the things we discuss in there. This system works in pretty much exactly the same way as the U.S. so-called ground-based missile defense, our national missile defense system. And thus it has exactly the same vulnerability to the kind of above-the-atmosphere countermeasures that are such a problem for that system. We also discussed the interceptors. The Missile Defense Agency has been claiming that the interceptors are too slow, about 6.3 kilometers per second, to catch up with Russian ICBMs. But in fact, the characteristic of the stages of these missiles and the characteristics of the homing kill vehicle and all that are all quite well known in terms of their weight and things like their specific impulse. And it's fairly straightforward to show that these interceptors should be much faster than this, in the vicinity of 8 to 8.5 kilometers per second, and then they should be able to catch Russian ICBMs in the western part of Russia. We also, in the article, raised the possibility that the Globus II radar in Vardo, Norway, could play a role. This is not nominally part of the system, but it is a very large and very powerful X-band dish radar. It was the subject of quite a bit of controversy over what its true role was when it was deployed there in about 2000. And so, as I said, there's no indication that the U.S. is currently planning to use it, but it is the only radar that we have in Europe that could probably even make a serious attempt at collecting discrimination data. Just one last thing I'll say is we're starting to get some responses from the Missile Defense Agency from this. And one I particularly wanted to alert people to is, I'll just read the statement. This is Rick Lehner, the spokesman for Missile Defense Agency. The radar proposed replacement in the Czech Republic has more than enough power for its role and has supported missile defense tests in the Pacific for nearly a decade over greater distances than will be required in Europe. Now, this is a really, in my view, misleading statement. It has not, in fact, in any of these missile defense tests in the Pacific, been used the way they're talking about here. It has not been used to launch the interceptors. The targets carried beacons and GPS receivers on them, and that data was used to launch the interceptors. Further, what matters is not the distance over which a test is being conducted, but how close the warhead comes to the radar. And in these scenarios, the warhead is basically fired directly at the close to directly at the radar. So this thing was clearly not detecting the warhead and using that to launch interceptors. It may well have been detecting the towards the end of the flight, the target cluster, because the decoys used on this in these tests would have hit quite large radar cross-sections and would have been easily detectable. All right, so I think I'll stop there.
And I'll also say that the other person on our call, of course, is the co-author of the article, Ted Postal, who, like George, is a physicist and is a professor of science, technology, and national security policy at MIT. So, Tom, I think now we'll open it up to questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone that if you would like to ask a question, please press 7 on your telephone keypad. And we have our first question. It comes from Turner Brinton from Space News.
Good morning, gentlemen. You say that our ground-based interceptors aren't fast enough to catch Russian ICBMs, but that has never been the stated purpose of this system. But I also see that in some way you're claiming that the system is designed to counter a Russian threat. That's never been what the MDA has said. So can you reconcile that for me?
Yeah, no.
Why don't I address that?
Go ahead.
If you look at the location of the interceptor site, which is in Poland,
uh-huh.
and the location of the Czech radar, and you do calculations. I can send you, in fact, it will be a briefing posted by the bulletin shortly after this discussion that will have diagrams in it that will show this. The radar in the Czech Republic, assuming it has the range, so this would be substantially upgraded radar, would be able to detect Russian ICBMs early enough in their flight to be able to manage interceptor launches from the Polish site to intercept the Russian missiles, at least in principle. Now, the actual interceptors, which are two-stage variants of the three-stage interceptor that supposed to be deployed in, is being deployed in the United States, they can achieve a speed of 8 to 8.5 kilometers per second, and possibly even higher than that. But there's some uncertainties that we need to nail down about the exact characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
That speed is high enough to utilize the queuing information that is available from the Czech radar and the tracking information to engage and intercept Russian ICBMs launched pretty much from any site west of the Urals toward the continental United States. And we've plotted that out in plot. Now, whether the Missile Defense Agency states that this is an objective, all we can say is there is a substantial history of the Missile Defense Agency making claims about things it can't do as well as things it can do. I don't accept the fact that the Missile Defense Agency makes a claim as being appropriate, as being necessarily the case. Now, when this issue was brought to the attention of the press, because it was covered
mm-hmm.
rather high level of detail by the Associated Press, the Missile Defense Agency claimed that the two-stage interceptor they have cannot achieve a speed higher than 6.3 kilometers per second. Now, the problem with that claim is that unless there are substantial parts of this interceptor that are constructed with lead bricks, there's no way that could be the case. We know pretty well what the interceptor's rocket stages are because they're derived from the Pegasus Minotaur launch vehicle series that Orbital Science builds for launching space satellites.
Mm-hmm.
And the ground-based interceptor is basically slight variances of this Pegasus Minotaur vehicle. And we know the stage weights and what are called the specific impulses of the engines. And it's basically a small Minuteman rocket. It's actually derived, these rocket stages are derived from Minuteman technology. So let me just give you a simple-minded example that's still useful. The actual weight of the interceptor is about 50,000 pounds. The actual weight of a Minuteman III ICBM is about 75,000 pounds. The throw weight of both of these missiles, given the rocket motor technologies are basically the same, should scale with the mass of the missile. So Minuteman has a payload of about 2,500 pounds to 10,000 kilometers range. And this interceptor, the GBI, using the same rocket motor technology, should be able to lift about 1,500 pounds to 10,000 kilometers range, if you were using it as an ICBM. Now, the actual payload it's carrying, now, if it can throw 1,500 pounds to 10,000 kilometers, that already means its burnout speed is over 7 kilometers per second, not 6.3. Now, if you note that the payload it's now throwing is not 1,500 pounds, but is closer to 150 pounds, mm-hmm. more than 10 times lighter, it's clear that this vehicle has a burnout speed with that much lighter payload that's much higher. Our calculations is 8 to 8.5, but it could even be higher than that. And the Missile Defense Agency has to explain why the commercial stages of the launch vehicle they have this interceptor that's derived from these commercial stages. They have to explain why it underperforms so dramatically relative to the thing they bought off the shelf.
Thank you.
Does that help you?
I guess I'm still a little bit unclear on. I thought George had said they would be unable to catch.
What I said is that the Missile Defense Agency says they are unable to do it, but as Ted just pointed out, straightforward calculations seem to indicate that they ought to be able to do it.
Okay, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. That's much more clear. Thank you, guys.
Now, if you don't find what you want in this briefing that is being posted on the web, you should contact me directly, and I'll send you the slides you need.
Okay.
But I think they're in it.
Once again, I would like to remind everyone that if you would like to ask a question, please press 7 on your telephone keypad. And I'm showing that there are no more questions at this moment.
Let me follow up with a couple questions. This is for either Ted or George. You talked a little bit about, how Vardo could potentially be used as a part of this European missile defense system. To either your or Ted's knowledge, do the Norwegian or Russian governments seem to be aware that the Globus II would be a part of this system?
Well, it's not clear it will be part of the system. We just point out that it could be used against a very small attack because it's not a phased array radar. But my guess is they are not.
Well, I would guess the Russians know because they have been analyzing this system in some considerable detail, including the Vardo radar, because they were extremely concerned about the Vardo radar when it was put in place in 1999, I guess. It's hard to know who knows what in the Norwegian government. When the Vardo radar was first put in place, it was misrepresented to the Norwegian parliament as a space track radar. It certainly does some space tracking. All of these radars, by their nature, can do space tracking and actually do space tracking. But in fact, its main purpose was intelligence gathering to observe the early flight phases from Plesetsk, where the Russians launch into Kamchatka. And the parliament was not informed about that main mission, and it caused quite a bit of political problems internally within Norway. So it's hard to know who knows what. I would be amazed if people in the Ministry of Defense, at least certain people, did not know that this radar was potentially usable for this purpose. And I would be equally amazed if there hadn't been discussions about it. We don't know. But I'm sure the Russians know.
Let me ask another follow-up question in terms of Russia has offered to make available some of their radars for this system. In your estimation, would that be a better way to counter the postulated threat of an Iranian attack?
Well, I think it would help a lot. I'm not sure it would solve the problem, but it would certainly greatly advance the radar tracking capability in this system, which is woefully inadequate. The only radar that currently can do the job ascribed to it by the Missile Defense Agency is the Fylingsdale radar, the radar in the UK. That radar is limited by the Earth's curvature. So an additional radar available closer to Iran, either in Azerbaijan or even better yet, in Armavir, Russia, which the Russians have also offered, would provide initial tracking data much earlier than would otherwise be the case, which then creates more opportunities for other radars to do something. Now, unfortunately, the EMR can never play a role in its current form. It'll have to be bulldozed down and a new radar put in place. But if the Vardo radar were being used to do discrimination, the Russian radars, which can do tracking but not discrimination, could help cue the Vardo radar. So if one is using what's called an exo-atmospheric missile defense, the offer to provide help from these Russian radars, if accepted, could enhance the very limited capabilities of this system. A more sensible approach would be to use some kind of boost phase missile defense, something that attacks the booster in powered flight, and that would require the cooperation of Russia. But the Russians have indicated that they are willing to talk about some kind of cooperative project. So this high-altitude missile defense is so vulnerable to decoys and other countermeasures that there's no chance it will work in any realistic scenario.
Tom, do you want to see if there's any follow-up questions?
Yes, we have our next question. It comes from Lou DeBose from Washington Spectator.
Yes. When you talked about the facts on the ground, when you are establishing facts on the ground, when you look at the sum components of this, what can you extrapolate on what actually would be built or what's intended?
You mean with regard to the European missile defense?
Yes, based on the components that are in place and that are in the pipeline, what does this system look like? What's actually being built?
Well, the in the Czech Republic there is this installation for the ground-based radar prototype, the GBRP. And in Poland, there is a site where 10 interceptors, 10 interceptor silos would be put in place. Now, the initial system is, I think, correctly described as very limited. But the problem is that president has issued a national security directive saying that the United States will upgrade and expand its missile defense components whenever the opportunity presents itself, whenever new technology or new capability or new ability to build presents itself. So the first step in this process is to get treaties with Poland and the Czech Republic to allow you to deploy these missile defense systems on their territories. And that's, in fact, what has been going on. The next step, when one chooses to upgrade, which, of course, the Missile Defense Agency, I think their statement, as George correct me, is that they have no plans to upgrade within the next 5 years. And interestingly caveated.
I haven't heard that statement. I haven't heard anything indicating any statement by them saying they have plans to upgrade.
They have no plans to upgrade for the next 5 years, is what I believe Obering said. I can check it
okay.
in a week.
The other radar, the so-called forward-based radar, is a radar we're actually sort of churning out at a rate of about one a year these days. This is basically the same radar that we have in Japan watching North Korea. It's the same radar as will be used for the THAAD theater missile defense system.
Now, the forward-based radar, there's been what they've talked about is that it would be deployed somewhere close to Iran. They have very carefully avoided saying where it would be deployed. There are diagrams that appear to show the forward-based X-band radar in Georgia. And there have been some press reports about discussions with Georgia and warnings from Russia not to do it with regard to, you know, the United States talking to Georgia and Russia issuing warnings about the radar being in Georgia. Another location could be eastern Turkey. But there has been no statement about where this forward-based radar would be placed. And it would be quite critical to the performance of the system since it's much closer in and has a better chance of tracking things, although our calculations show that even that will have limited capability. So these components all would have to be upgraded substantially. If you imagine that the Iranian threat is real, I'm not one of these people who believe that, but let's just assume that the Missile Defense Agency's claims are true for the moment. Then you would have in Iran a country who had developed the technology and industrial infrastructure to build ICBMs. So they're going to have a production line. And I don't understand, and nobody else I've talked to who's looked at this understands why they would produce one ICBM and not just keep producing them on this production line. And so the Polish deployment area with only 10 interceptors must be designed to be expandable. And I have a diagram in this briefing that will be placed on the web after this discussion that gives you a feel for how, for example, 100 interceptor deployment might look like. It would cover an area less than the grounds of the Capitol building. So this site could be expanded very substantially. At least it would not cover enormous amounts of ground in addition to what already would be the case if the United States reaches an agreement with Poland. So I think the bottom line is that what the Russians are mostly concerned about is not the current system, but the apparent direction to upgrade this system very substantially over time.
And we have our next question.
comes from Doug Richardson from Jane's Info Group.
Good morning. Given the shortage of reliable information on radar cross-section, actual real radar cross-sections of military hardware, how did you generate the RCS estimates you're using in your paper, and how confident are you that they're correct?
Well, first of all, there is no shortage of radar cross-section data. You go to radar books, you'll find cross-section data on these things all over the place. So that's not, I think you're working under an inaccurate assumption. George has generated radar cross-sections from basic radar theory in addition to using stuff that's published, but the basic model of the radar cross-section that we've been using is something that was published by the Missile Defense Agency in one of their journals. I'm just looking to see if I have it here. I'm going through my briefing to the German Physical Society. Yes.
It starts the back.
Yeah, when you look up the briefing that will be posted on the web, on slide number 35 in the PDF file, be in a PDF file, you'll see a slide called Radar Cross-Section of Large Round Nose Warhead. And you'll see graphs below with the radar cross-section as a function of viewing angle. That data is generated by the Missile Defense Agency. And so if you think it's wrong, I suggest you ask them about it and certainly come back to us if they say it is wrong.
When you talk about the possibility of the system engaging Russian ICBMs, are you assuming that you'd get the interceptor away early enough to get a forward hemisphere approach to a Russian ICBM?
Well, that depends on where the launch site of the Russian ICBM is relative to the Polish launch site. If the launch is, for example, from Tyshevo, you will get a crossing trajectory. That is, they pretty much at right angles. If the launch is from the closest location, the original one that the Missile Defense Agency provided slides to the Europeans about, which is Vipoltsevo, the interceptor would be basically catching the warhead from behind. So it depends on, the interesting thing is the closer the launch location is, the more likely it will be back chase. And the reason for that is because you cannot launch the interceptor immediately upon launch of the ICBM. You have to first observe the ICBM with the Czech radar, and that takes some time because the curvature of the Earth blocks the vision of the view, the line of sight of the Czech radar. Then once the Czech radar is observing the ICBM, you cannot necessarily launch while the ICBM is in full-powered flight. You can probably launch maybe 40 or 50 seconds before it ends powered flight. But while it's in powered flight, the ICBM could change the trajectory of the warhead substantially. And so you cannot launch, you don't know where or how to predict exactly where the intercept point has to occur. And so you need to wait basically until the ICBM finishes its powered flight and the target is on a ballistic trajectory that cannot be altered. And all of that is considered in our calculations. And again, if you look in this briefing that will be on the web,
you'll find figures that show where the radar begins tracking and when the launches occur. If, again, you have further questions, you should feel free to contact me, and I will be happy to provide you with additional slides beyond those in this briefing.
What is puzzling me is if you've got a tail chase, how do you catch something going at ICBM velocity with an interceptor that's traveling at ICBM velocity?
Because the interceptor is not traveling at ICBM velocity. It's traveling 8 to 8.5 kilometers per second, while the actual target in this particular case is traveling at about 6 kilometers per second. So you're overtaking it from behind.
But you're losing a lot of the potential kinetic energy of the impact.
Well, you would be impacting the target at about 2 to 2.5 kilometers per second, which is about 1.5 to 2 times higher speed than a tank round hitting something. And a tank round seems to do a pretty good job penetrating large amounts of armor. So the impact speed would still be quite high. And it would certainly have the kinetic energy of the impact would be roughly half to two-thirds as much energy would be imparted to the warhead as the equivalent weight of the interceptor in TNT. So that seems to me to be a substantial amount of kinetic energy.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm showing that there are no further questions at this time.
Let me ask, what is Iran's current missile capability in the first place?
Well, Iran has a missile that's called the Shahab-3. And the Shahab-3 is pretty unambiguously derived from the North Korean Nodong missile, which can deliver a payload of maybe 2,000 pounds to 1,000 to 1,200 kilometers range. The important thing about the Nodong missile and the Shahab-3 is that the technologies used in both of these missiles is basically slightly upgraded Scud technology. By Scud technology, I mean the rocket motors are really not very efficient. They have what's called a specific impulse of about 240 seconds. What that basically means is that the velocity of the exhaust travels at about 2,400 meters per second. Now, this velocity of exhaust is a very, very important parameter that measures the efficiency of the rocket motor. And the efficiency of the rocket motor, if you're going to build an intermediate range ballistic missile or an ICBM, should be at about 300 to 320 seconds of a specific impulse. So unless the rocket motors can be vastly improved, the Shahab-3 is not a path to an ICBM, as claimed by many of these people who clearly have not, either do not understand or have not looked at the technology. A second feature of the Nodong and Shahab-3 that's critical to understanding whether or not this thing can be scaled into an ICBM is the airframe itself, that is to say the vehicle structure, the aerodynamic structure of the vehicle. This is a ribbed structure that is basically built almost like an airplane airframe. Such a structural design is much too heavy relative to the overall weight of the vehicle to be scaled up to build an ICBM or even a relatively efficient intermediate range ballistic missile. The kind of mechanical structure that you have to go to would be what was used by basically all the countries that have built ICBM-capable liquid propellants, which is you go to a very, very, very thin external structure, aerodynamic structure, and you give it strength by inflating it with the propellant. That is to say, you have the propellant under pressure intentionally to give rigidity to this vehicle. That's a very, very complicated mechanical engineering achievement. It's very demanding. And this is a technique that the Iranians would have to refine and develop and implement with a large ballistic missile, along with the very efficient rocket motors, which they haven't demonstrated, and of course rather large fuel pumps and control systems, none of which we've seen any evidence for. So I would say, based on this sort of simple review of the technology, that in fact the national intelligence estimate issued by the United States in 1999, which basically pointed things like this out, and the most recent statements made by the Russians, which their position basically being that there's no evidence that the Iranians are near a long-range ICBM, are in fact in agreement. I think the only thing that's in disagreement is the statements of political people in the Bush administration who have misstated the case. I think they should provide technical information that suggests that these very advanced technologies, which have not been demonstrated by either the North Koreans or Iran, are that they have evidence that this is being that this is becoming available to them.
One of the key things with Iran's program is it's quite apparent that they've benefited from a lot of outside help. As Ted mentioned, the longest range missile they have that they actually have is just a straight copy of a North Korean missile. And so a big variable is going to be how much help they can get. And that makes it somewhat harder to predict.
Yeah, I think if they get help, if somebody who really has the technology is willing to sell them either missiles or turnkey system, then you have a problem. And there's no debate about that. There shouldn't be any debate about that.
Tom, do we have any other questions?
I'm showing that there are no more questions at this time.
Let me, to kind of wrap up the Q&A portion, let's talk a little bit about countermeasures. Could the proposed European missile defense system defeat countermeasures?
The answer is no, and a resounding no, and an unambiguous no. Again, in the briefing that will be put up on the web shortly after this this discussion ends, the second slide in the briefing, after the first page in the briefing, just lists the countermeasures that the national intelligence estimate on foreign missile technology development in 1999, which is referenced there, so you can find the document itself. It lists the countermeasures that the 1999 national intelligence estimate stated would be available to any country who tests its first ICBM. So this is a powerful statement, if it's true. Maybe the intelligence community is wrong on this. But basically what the statement says is that any country that has the technology to build an ICBM and deploy it will also have the technology to build these countermeasures. And just reading from the chart, which is in front of me here, the countermeasures include separating warheads, spin-stabilized warheads, warhead reorientation, radar-absorbing material, booster fragmentation, low power jammers, chaff, and simple balloon decoys. Now, the first three of these countermeasures, separating warheads, spin stabilized, and reorienting warheads, are described in some detail later in the briefing. If you don't have knowledge of the radar cross-section of objects, these statements look fairly meaningless to you. But basically, what they mean is that if I can take the warhead and orient it in space in a way that it reflects very small amounts of radar, I can essentially make it near invisible, or in effect invisible to the radar. This is actually the same principle that stealth aircraft use. If you look at the wings of most of the stealth aircraft that, well, the stealth aircraft of the United States has been deploying, you can see the design is such that it's easy to turn the aircraft in an orientation so that you don't get what's called a specular reflection, direct reflection off wing edges or ends. This is the same technique being applied if you have the ability to orient the vehicle in space. Radar observing material is available everywhere because radar observing material is used in all kinds of commercial as well as military applications. Booster fragmentation, there's a diagram showing how you could intentionally cut a booster up to create so many targets. It would not be possible, a very low chance of identifying the warhead. But the last countermeasure, simple balloon decoys, are exactly what the Missile Defense Agency has admitted or indicates that they agree could be a countermeasure. In the case of the Missile Defense Agency, they've carefully designed all of their flight tests so that the simple balloon decoy that they use is many times brighter and easily distinguishable from the warhead. But if it's possible for an adversary to build balloon decoys, then the adversary should be able to build a balloon decoy that's roughly as bright as the warhead, or more likely, put the warhead inside one of these balloons and then fly a lot of balloons next to it, making everything indistinguishable from everything else. So basically, this national intelligence estimate is basically saying that the first ICBMs we face will have countermeasures that can defeat the national missile defense, the ground-based missile defense that we're currently building, and all of its upgrades.
And how often have the countermeasures been mentioned in these unclassified NIEs since 1999?
They have not been mentioned at all. And it raises the question of whether there's been political tampering with the intelligence, as we know occurred with regard to the run-up to the Gulf War of 2003. And I have urged people in Congress who are looking into this to call the CIA up for more testimony and find out why it hasn't been mentioned.
And Tom, do we have any further questions?
I'm showing that there are no other questions at this time.
Well, just in conclusion, I want to remind everybody that all of the briefing materials from today's discussion will be available on the Bulletin's website, which is the www.thebulletin.org, shortly. That includes audio of this briefing, a PDF of the article is already on the website. The article is entitled The European Missile Defense Folly, and as Ted has referred to, a PDF of a PowerPoint he delivered before the German Physical Society in late February, which further documents and graphically demonstrates the findings presented in the Bulletin article. Also, both Ted and George are available for any follow-up interviews, and to do that, you can contact me at jschollmeyer@thebulletin.org. That's jschollmeyer at thebulletin.org, or call me in Chicago at 312-364-9710, extension 16. That number again, 312-364-9710. 9710, extension 16. And I just wanted to thank everybody who participated in the call, and George and Ted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.